somebody calls in, I've got a problem with my computer. Which computer are you on?
Mine.
I don't know.
Mine.
Yeah. And even when you're like, okay, look at the sticker. The sticker says Dale. No, not that sticker.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSP. And joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Oh. Good afternoon, Tom.
Yeah, we're in trouble again.
Why is that?
It's afternoon when we're recording. And it's because, you know, we get rabbit holes and other people want us to be done. And
Well, not only that, but when it's time for us to meet to record, you know, I got a knock at my door. And this gentleman wearing a hard hat says, "Hey, dude, we're going to cut your power here in about 30 minutes. I was like, what?
Wait,
be recording.
What?
How long is it going to be down? Well, we don't near know that, but it'll be up as quick as possible. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
So they up there working on the pole. And of course, I got a new drone recently. So
yeah, that's a great story right there.
Yeah. So I send my drone up to investigate what the people are doing on the pole.
That was a good one. Yeah. Because I got to do that, he says.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm, you know, doing the flybys.
the toys.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to say, it's one of those things where I've wanted one for a while, just never wanted to drop the money on it. And, you know, thanks to shout out to Capital One's rewards card, I was able to buy one with just my card points.
Right, there you go.
So Donna's referring to the horror story of, I think, day two, maybe day three that I had it.
It was early. It was like you told me you had it, then there was a catastrophe.
Yeah. So I realized that flying it by looking at it is not quite as easy as you think it is. It's actually better if you fly it looking at the, you know, the phone so you can see the camera view, because I didn't realize at one point when I was bringing it in for a landing, I was going to bring it to me, closer to me to land. And I live in a very wooded area, and I had the drone facing the other direction.
I did not know.
When I proceeded to floor it straight into a tree.
But you saved it from the hawks that were circling.
Yeah. The reason why I was landing it so quickly, because there were all these hawks circling it. So I'm... Ran into a tree.
Saved it from the hawk, but not you.
Which, you know, initially I'm thinking as it hits the tree, I'm like, well, there goes the blades. No, not a big deal. It actually comes with another set of blades because they know people like me are going to tear them up. Mm-hmm. But my stepson, he's out, you know, near where it crashed, and he goes out and picks it up out of the field and goes, oh, no. The camera is hanging out of it like, you know, like an eyeball hanging out of its socket. It's just hanging there. And I'm like, yeah, that's not good. It's not good at all.
Nothing about it. But you fixed it yourself. Yes,
being the technical nerd that I am, I'm like, I can fix this. So I had to figure out what it tore up. And
2 weeks later, you got all the parts and it's back into humming shape, at least for now.
Yep. Yep.
Till you wreck it again.
It is now up and terrifying the neighborhood yet again.
And hopefully when you wreck it the next time, you crash it, the glue that you have in there, the Gorilla Glue.
Yeah, hopefully it'll still hold.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in this episode, we'll dive into it in a second, but we are going to be talking about why you need asset inventories.
Yes.
Yeah. So before we get into that, though, we do want to remind everybody, the HIPAA Boot Camp 2022.
through 2, 25, 22. Yeah.
And you sent me a meme earlier that had a bunch of guys standing behind a wall with a long pole opening up the door that said 2022. I'm like, that's exactly how I feel. What is behind this door?
No, I know. It just like, it was perfect when I saw it.
Yep.
But yeah, we're going to do virtual because we can only count on that door opening so far by February.
Mm-hmm.
But the big news, we officially have, save the date, people, save the date. Contracts were signed this week, which by the time you hear this, maybe everything will be ready, but you know how we are at getting things done. But we do have the date, September 12th through the 15th in Louisville, Kentucky. The first ever in-person PriceSec boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
We're turning it in. It's going to be bigger and better. We have a long-term plan, but we got to start somewhere. So this one is it's going to be interesting. We've got a lot of cool things planned if we can pull them all off. And
Donna, what does PriceSec stand for?
Privacy and security.
Okay.
Privacy and security. I'm trying to bring in the phrase PriceSec. You can't call it PriceSec. And yeah, it's shorter than privacy and security. So that's our phrase that we're gonna popularize it. You mm-hmm. heard it here, and you're gonna hear it here over and over, and then you'll find yourself saying it. Yep. That's the plan for that. But hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll be having some registration and details, and there will be a link to it in the show notes. So go to the website for this episode, and we'll have stuff all over the place by then, hopefully. But at a minimum, you can go check it out. We even have a domain, don't we, David?
We have several. As we were brainstorming what to call it, we were buying all kinds of domains.
Yeah, so there's going to be stuff out there. We just got to get it all up and running for you. But September 12th through the 15th, Louisville, Kentucky. Count on it. It yep. starts on Monday afternoon, runs all day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, with the bourbon and breeches as promised. And the hotel was so committed to the bourbon and breeches concept, they actually wrote into the contract what they would charge to do the bourbons. So,
sweet.
Yeah, I was surprised. So we're excited. We're excited.
Absolutely. I am.
But thrilled. If you want to register for virtual boot camp, we didn't tell them where to go.
For the virtual boot camp, thehippabootcamp.com is where to go.
Yep. Easy, it's up. Easy. Ready to go right now. You can go register.
Yep.
Actually, you better register now by the time this comes out.
Yep. I was just thinking, I was like, wow, yeah, it's almost January. As we record this, it's almost January.
Yeah, so this will be out in January. We're going to take a Friday off and not record for the 24th. It'll be the first time we just skip all together and we don't rush to get one in. We've managed to do that somehow.
Yeah.
So
that is true. That is true.
We're way ahead, but we'll be back to barely getting them done soon.
All right, so we want to say thanks to our donors. We appreciate it. And if you want to know more about donating to help us keep the lights on, you can check out our website and learn some more there. And you can be a donor. We can talk good stuff about you.
We can talk about how awesome you are.
That's right.
Appreciate it. Every little thing, it does help these days.
Yep, sure does. All right, you ready for the HIPAA?
Say what? I am. So this one I saw, it. You know, I think I'm getting to the point where I see things that don't make sense to me, so I might as well share it with everybody else to see that it doesn't make sense for them either. Or that you could give me direction. So there are a lot of questions, as always, in a notice of a data breach. There's lots of questions. But this particular one, I had several questions. And it's a lesson to learn. So let's just go about it. So this is the Oregon Anesthesiology Group. I even said that right, I think. And I mean, this is a huge group. Apparently, if you're getting put under in any way, shape, or form, one of these people's doing it in the state. It's that big. And they published at oaginformation.com a notice of a data breach. Now, I'm going to share some excerpts of what's in that notice, but I do want to point out that apparently they've spun up this one domain name, and the only thing it has there is this notice.
Huh.
Yes. It doesn't have a link to their normal website or anything. Huh. And I didn't search around their normal website to see, but I didn't see a link to it from there.
Hmm. So is it distancing yourself from the information? Yeah, we've got a site up for that.
So apparently, yes, that I'm not going to say anything other than SEO, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
So I question whether that meets the requirement of having it on the web. We'll see if there's a link to it or something, but not for me to figure out. I got even more confused past that. So here's what was on the here. What had happened was that they experienced a cyber attack on July 11th, which they said, after which we were briefly locked out of our servers.
Okay.
What does that say to you?
They were certainly compromised.
And probably ransom some?
Yeah, probably. Well, the whole briefly. Can you define briefly?
Yeah, there we go. Now you're with me. Because then they say we were able to respond quickly to restore our systems from offsite backups.
Oh, boy.
After which we began the process of rebuilding our IT infrastructure from the ground up.
Okay.
So that says major ransomware to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a lot of, you know, a lot had to happen. So there alone, we know we were infiltrated. We know it was bad, and we had to rebuild our entire IT infrastructure from the ground up. This is a stressful time, I can assure you. These poor folks, those of you who have been through this, you know how they were sweating it. You know how they were stressed out. And they say, we also engaged the services of a cyber forensics firm, which started an investigation shortly after the attack.
Okay.
Now, there's a couple of things in that one paragraph that we always tell people is you don't start restoring until the forensics folks have gotten their information. Because if you restore, what happens?
You destroyed evidence.
That's right. So you then can't really tell everything that was happening. So either, and the way that you make those forensic copies of servers is byte by byte. On a huge, you know, terabit amount of data. That takes a while to build those copies, save them off, and get them to forensics folks.
It's briefly. It just takes briefly amount of time.
Yeah. They were briefly locked out of their servers, which tells me, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things in here that I don't understand. You know, is it that they're explaining it in a way that if you're not technical and know to ask these questions, it makes you feel better?
Right.
Also known as PR. So we'll just go, you know, with the assumptions. But then it goes on to say, on October 21st, the FBI notified OAG, the Oregon, that it had seized an account belonging to Hello Kitty.
Not to be confused with the company.
No, it's a Ukrainian hacking group.
Boy, they sound evil.
No, right? That's how they get away with it, right? You know what? Oh, it's just Hello Kitty. Let them Anyway, the account that Hello Kitty had that the FBI seized had patient and employee files from OAG in it.
Is it a bunch of teenage girls in the group?
Mm, I don't know. It's Ukrainians. This is what they think of everybody else. You know, or the hacker that was setting it up has a kid that was, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. Hello, script kiddies.
That's it right there. So the FBI in October, and as you pointed out, there's a distance between July 11th.
Yeah, we're like October
21st. A little more than that, right? That's a lot. So they get notified that this data with patient and employee files is out on this Hello Kitty's account. They've stolen it. And the FBI believes Hello Kitty exploited a vulnerability in our third-party firewall, mm-hmm. enabling the hackers to gain entry to the network.
Mm-hmm.
So that sentence says, I have an unpatched firewall.
Yep.
Because there's not like 0 days going around in firewalls.
Boy, that's going to segue perfectly into our topic today.
Isn't it? Isn't it? We're going to get there. We're going to get there. So we've got this third-party firewall, quote-unquote, that has a vulnerability, which means it's not up to date. Because as far as I know, there were no zero-day vulnerabilities in firewalls that didn't have a patch in that time frame. I don't know that there's one happening right now. I mean, there's other things happening, don't get me wrong. But at any rate, you know, could be missing something. Don't know all of them. Not going to say I do. But that tells me something that then I got questions about, you know? What was the third-party firewall? Because I really don't want people using it unless it's up to date. And was there a problem up to getting it up to date? And who was the third party? Is that somebody that one of my groups may be using, but I don't know? You know, this is a whole nother list of issues. But then they add this sentence. According to the cyber forensics report that they got in late November, okay, so we got 5 months, roughly, pushing that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, 4.
And so we're pushing 5 because we're talking late November and to December. So once inside, the criminals were able to data mine the administrator's credentials and access their encrypted data, the OAG's encrypted data.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, that's a long time. I expect these things to take a long time, but that's a lot longer than I would have expected to get it. You know, a month later, after I've heard from the FBI, I then get it a month later. Now, I would expect that after the forensics people took it shortly after in July, I would get it a month later. But I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't know. Okay, but also that they were able to access the encrypted data. We have to go over this time and time again. If I can log in, the data is not likely, unless you're using more than the standard encryption methods, you do not have data that is encrypted. If I can log in, the encryption is turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that say, right? Is it confusion? Is it, you know, they just wanted to get the word encrypted in there, I guess.
Makes them look better.
Yeah. So then they go on to say that following the July attack, so we go July, October, November, back to July. We did do all these things, and they make a point of saying following the July attack, but before we were notified by FBI. We had already reevaluated and updated all of our control policies. We'd replaced the firewall, expanded multi-factor, contracted with a third party for 24/7 real-time monitoring with live response. So they just went from 0 to 100, apparently, with this massive security monitoring and increased cloud-based infrastructure, i.e. we're getting rid of the stuff. We're not going to try to protect it anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, we see that happen a lot. Like, we don't have time, we don't have money, and then suddenly, pour it all in there. And then it ends with the data breach potentially impacted about 750,000 patients and 522 current and former employees. And then here's the last sentence. Although OAG has no evidence to suggest actual or attempted misuse of information. I'm just going to let that one sit for a minute. As a result of this incident, we are notifying individuals who may have been affected.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that last sentence is almost in every one of them. Oh, we don't think that anybody's going to misuse this, and we have no evidence that they have so far.
We have no evidence to suggest actual or attempted misuse. If a hacker in the Ukraine has my information, I'm going to go with that's actual misuse.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, but that's my book. But I understand where, you know, these are not easy to write. These are not easy, you know, but when I review them for folks, I worry about making sure that it's accurate.
Okay, but
and maybe no, it did it.
But time out. So I'm still not clear how FBI got involved here.
The FBI, that's another question. So let's go through the questions we have. I have like six questions. Boom, right up. All right. Okay. They aren't on the OCR portal for over 500 breaches yet, but we got 750,000. Mm-hmm. And 522 in employees. So right. We're talking, they're not on the portal yet. I would expect them to be on the portal already.
Right.
Because they knew that in October. Okay. Mm-hmm. They knew it, a lot of things. And what does it mean when they say briefly locked out of the servers? What does it mean when they say rebuilt IT infrastructure from the ground up? How can you be briefly locked out of your servers and rebuild the infrastructure from the ground up as a result of being briefly locked out of your servers? That doesn't make sense to me. And then the FBI sees the Ukrainian hacking group's accounts. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing is that Ukrainian hacking group must have been involved in ransomware attacks and other attacks, which has got the FBI's attention, and the FBI found the data in a separate...
Which makes their last sentence crazy. Like, how can you say there's no evidence to suggest actual or attempted misuse? I mean, okay, sure, you could say there's not been actual or attempted misuse. However, come on now.
Now you're with me.
Why do you think they have it? Because they intend.
That's where I have a problem.
They intend to misuse it.
And if they said they didn't misuse it yet, oh, yeah, I'm going to believe them.
Yeah.
No.
It's not our intention to misuse the data. We're just data mining for the sake of it. Mm. I mean, who are they? Facebook?
We're security testers.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So that I have a problem with that sentence because the FBI found them. They did not notify the FBI.
Exactly. Yeah. Hello, Kitty.
Right. Yeah. And... the Oregon folks were just part of the big FBI operation scooping up this data. And how did the FBI tell them that it was a problem with the firewall?
Well,
if they already fixed it and they didn't hear from the FBI until October.
Well, that's kind of... okay. You have a big major security incident. Did you not, at that point, replace the firewall?
Yes.
And did you not? So yeah, they did.
It says they did.
Okay.
After it says in that section about after following the July attack, but before we were notified of the account seizure by the FBI, and we did all these things, and it included replaced our third-party firewall. That was one of the things in the list.
Okay.
So they did that before they heard from the FBI. The FBI comes in October, and now they think that the FBI says, oh, well, we believe they exploited a vulnerability in your firewall.
Okay.
See?
Yeah, I see. Just there's just still more questions.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, so I took this firewall out months ago, done away with it, The FBI shows up and I go, oh, here's my old firewall.
Mm-hmm. Like, how did that? I don't know. Maybe it was this particular Hello Kitty group was attacking a particular vulnerability in particular, firewalls. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how they knew. Yeah. But most of the hacking groups, you know, who knows?
But the other part of this thing is like, okay, why didn't you have somebody looking at all these things all the time anyway?
Well, that gets into, you know, other stuff about I'm just trying to figure out the notification. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's confusing enough.
Yeah, because it's not making sense to me what you're telling me happened. So if I was one of those 750,000 patients or 500 and something employees, I would have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I would be asking questions. And then the last question we've already kind of pointed out, you get your cyber forensics report in late November, which they started on shortly after the attack in July.
That's a while.
I know it takes a while, right? But mm-hmm. I have never had it take that long. Not ever. I've had it take, 4 weeks, maybe six, but not that. But there was a lot going on then. I know that we had trouble getting stuff moved up on the list in forensics teams during that time because there were so many attacks going on. So hopefully it's just, people trying to write the language and didn't have anybody like us kind of reviewing it going, hey, if anybody understands, clearly you don't understand whoever wrote this, there's going to be questions. Let's clarify some of it. Maybe that's just it and legal stuff. We just set that aside. But still, here's the reminder is unless they did an under 500 breach, which based on everything else we're questioning, I'm going to go with no. Right? They didn't report that. You're supposed to do that within 60 days. Report to them. And everybody kind of groups that in with notify all the patients. And we had our local OCR investigator friend do a special Q&A webinar for the end of the year for the Cardin Club. Go to cardinhq.com/club to learn more. The Cardin Club members this week. And this was a topic that we talked about is you don't wait until you get the forensics back. If it looks like you had a full infiltration, which clearly they did, they had to rebuild from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if they had to restore, something happened. And you go ahead and you say to HHS, look, we've had an incident. And even if you say that there was 400, or you say there were, whatever, say less than 500, but let them know that there is something going on and you still don't know who the patients are, but you're trying to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the notification to them is a separate notification within 60 days than the notification to patients within 60 days. They don't go together. And so she was reiterating to them that it was important for us to get the message out that you need to do this, that you need to, if you have an incident, go ahead. You can always amend it. You can retract it. You can do all these things later. But you don't want to be the one that the FBI comes and shows you how much trouble you're in, 3 or 4 months later. I'm just saying. So HIPAA says, notify HHS within 60 days of discovery of an incident. Notify patients within 60 days of discovery of an incident in writing. So two separate notifications. One, you have to provide all the details in your written letter to the patients. You have to know who the patients are in order to notify them. So it is within reason that you're still trying to figure it out. But the OCR folks can get on the phone, they can understand, they can provide guidance, they can be on top of it at that point instead of being surprised by 750,000 months later.
And you can create a different domain and put your information there.
Yeah, that one I got to go, because if that flies, I've got to put that on my to-do list for people that are dealing with this. you know, why not?
Yeah.
If that's reasonable, why not do it?
Exactly.
I just have to look at what the rules say and what the law says.
Yeah, I would do it too.
Yeah. I mean, right. I don't have any qualms about doing it as long as it meets your obligations under the law.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I can't be sure about is that doing it that way does meet your obligations under the law.
Yeah. Yeah. From a Google indexing perspective, it would be better.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that rolls into our topic for today, which is why you need asset inventories.
Because you need assets. Mm. You got to know what your assets are and where they are.
Yeah. Not the one behind you. So when we talk about asset inventory, sometimes people get hung up on simply the hardware.
Yep.
And they don't look at asset inventory of software, even of data. Now, where are your data assets? Mm-hmm. Then where is your software assets? And this is where in our firm, we see a lot of issues that people, you know, will come in, especially for a new client. We come in and, all right, what type of IT assets do you have? And they give us a list. Well, we've got 25 computers and a server. Okay, what kind of software assets do you have on those? I don't know.
What kind of printers do you have connected?
Yeah.
How about wireless access points? What about firewalls? Firewalls.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all these. So beyond the desktops, they're just drawing a blank. And then when you say something like, well, where's your data assets? Mm-hmm. Where's your data live? Oh, that's a fun question.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the answer is always, it's only on the server. It's never on the desktops. That's why we don't have to encrypt the desktops.
Yeah. Or it's all in the cloud. It's all in the cloud in our
EHR. Never on the desktops. Never.
I'm like, no. I've yet to find that ever to be true.
Yep. I mean, you have a case where they come in and steal all your desktops. When was the last time you looked to make sure or ask all your employees whether or not they were doing something?
Mm-hmm. We had I think I mentioned this before, we had a client recently, fortunately not healthcare, but somebody broke into their building and stole their firewall and their network attached storage device, which basically acts as their file server. So my initial thing was, this person, you know, must know something. Like, they're trying to get a hold of the data. They're stealing the data.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing was that the place had camera systems. They left the camera systems there.
Yeah, that's interesting. They took the data I'm sure the data from the cameras being sent to there.
But here's the thing that was interesting. And after an investigation with the police, you know, we stayed involved in what was going on. Actually, what happened was the guy that broke into the place saw these two pieces of equipment and said, I think I could probably pawn these off pretty easily.
No way.
I mean, he simply stole it because he wanted to quick sell it and buy drugs. So all the conspiracies I had in my head about this guy had to know what was on these things. And he went straight for the data and, you know, had all this stuff about this guy, knew what he was doing. No, he had no idea.
They were just little.
Yeah. He's like, oh, these things are small. They're cool. There's flashing lights. I could probably get some money out of this.
Okay, that's good. That's a good one.
But the device was never recovered, you know, so fortunately it was encrypted, but yeah, never recovered.
Who'd he sell it to, I wonder?
I don't know that he sold it or did anything with it, but I mean, it's really not even usable because it's cloud managed. And so once we cut off the service to it, you can't do anything with it. You can't even boot it into anything.
So, interesting.
It's just whatever. It's a brick at this point, but still.
Boat anchor.
Yep.
But yes, again, this is why we talk about having the inventory. So when somebody breaks in, you know what was taken.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than just, hey, we got this many laptops and this many. How many mobile devices do you have? Where do they stay? Who locks those up? How about your laptops? Who's making sure that they don't, you know, one of the things that happens often is a piece of equipment gets put away somewhere because it's not used often, and then no one remembers where it is, so you don't know whether it's gone or not.
But doesn't HIPAA say something about that?
It does. It does. It does. You know, we've dealt with people that moved their office before, and you know, they had IT come in and get all the computers and move everything, and it's all moved over, and then they can't find this one piece of equipment that they brought with them. It's old. They only use it for X, Y, and Z. It's gone. Clearly, the IT people lost it. And the IT people are like, clearly not. It's on the inventory. It left. It came there. It's there. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Well, we found that one time it did check in with the DNS. And it looked like it was in that office. So I'm like, y'all go there and no one leaves until they find it. You know where it was?
Under a desk.
Kind of. It was under the table in the back of the administrator's office. Nobody looked there. You don't look at the administrator's office for the thing you can't find.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But we've looked everywhere.
It's probably the administrator telling you to go find it.
Yeah. You know, but we've looked everywhere. No, you didn't look in here.
Yeah.
You know, because you're looking for it to be set up. And you've got to remember and document where all these things are.
Yeah. Well, this is something most people don't know. Maintaining a record of the movements of hardware and electronics media is not something people typically do.
And that is under HIPAA. Mm-hmm. 164.310.D.2.III.
And you knew that off the top of your head.
No, I had to write it. I knew it was. I knew it was in the physical safeguards. But you know what? And there's actually more references, but this is a simple, straightforward one. But having in a risk analysis, you have to have an inventory of your hardware, your software, and data to do it properly.
Yeah, but this just isn't just a HIPAA thing either, right?
No,
like not at all. Like we see this all over the place, don't we?
Yep, that is true because we've got it under HICCUP, and all the big organizations that are like, we have too many to keep up with. Yeah, it's in your recommendations from the HHS 405D group. And all the small ones that say, we don't need, yes, it's in the recommendations for them to conduct and manage an inventory of IT assets, keeping up with them. It's in HICCUP. It's in HIC Scrim. If I use the recommended method to evaluate healthcare business associates, the vendors, mm-hmm. using the recommended method, there is an entire section in the assessment that they hand out. Asset and change management. Do you maintain a detailed inventory of hardware, software, assets used by your company and refresh it at least annually? And you're tracking ownership and all of these kind of things. And you know where else it's at?
I know.
Where is it, David?
It's in the NIST cybersecurity framework.
Yes, under the identify function, there is an entire category called asset management. And we could keep going. There is no, I'm pretty sure, I didn't go look, but I bet you PCI DSS has some sort of something about knowing what you got connected. Or, you know, maybe that one doesn't because it's so narrow, but all the ISOs, all of the SIS, all of the COBITs, you're not going to find any kind of recommended way to manage this stuff that doesn't include having an accurate inventory of all of it.
No, I mean, it's impossible to do anything in your program, PriceSec program, until you understand what you have. You know,
and to keep up with it. How do you know if it's lost if you don't even know you have it?
Yeah. I mean, it's just number one is what do you have? You don't know what that you're protecting if you don't know what it is you're supposed to be protecting and where it's at and what right. it has on it or not. I mean, you have to have this data. It's like if you called me in to say, give me a price on what it would cost to give me tech support or provide IT cybersecurity. My first question to you is going to be, okay, what is the assets that I'm supporting or protecting?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, is it Cardin that's calling you with the remote users and there's, you know, not a ton of us, but then there's a nerd like me? Or you know, are you getting a call from Delta Airlines? You know, a company that's huge, you're just supposed to know. You don't know either answer. You've got to ask.
No, I had one just this week. It was a company that called and wanted a price on something. And just, you know, the initial conversation, I'm thinking, okay, you know, they probably got 10 computers, whatever. No, they got 75 computers. And I'm like, okay, I completely misread that one.
This is why we ask.
Yeah.
So there is a NIST publication, special publication 1800-5, IT asset management. They describe it as the cybersecurity IT asset management practice guide is a proof of concept solution to help show how you can do this. And they, you know, they say right up front, look, we use some tools. We're not saying go use these tools. We're saying this is a way it can be done for all the people that aren't grasping what we're talking about doing. Mm-hmm. But it had a perfect list of why it is important to do this asset management. And I mean, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, what, 6 of them? I should have done numbers instead of bullets when I put it in the notes. But I mean, the first one enables faster responses to security alerts by revealing the location, configuration, and owner of a device.
Yeah, Tim, we have this issue often where mm-hmm. somebody calls in, I've got a problem with my computer. Which computer are you on?
Mine.
I don't know.
Mine.
Yeah. And even when you're like, okay, look at the sticker. The sticker says Dale. No, not that sticker.
Yes. So I can't fix things that I don't know about, which we'll get to a help desk thing in a minute. Because, all right, increases cybersecurity resilience because you can focus attention on the most valuable asset. Provides detailed system information to auditors. Yeah, that kind of goes without saying. And I think that when we talk about an inventory, that's what most people think we want it for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is not, that's like, that again, I do it for all these other reasons, and that's just a bonus.
Right.
Because determines how many software licenses are actually used in relation to how many have been paid for.
Mm-hmm.
How many times you run into people that are paying for like 10 extra licenses they don't need? And it's a small business.
Run into that. I also run into people that buy one account and use it for 5 different employees, which, mm-hmm. you know. Violation of terms of service.
A little bit of, you know, and that's like they're using it for email and everything. And it's the most important piece is things like, you know, we went through this with the antivirus security software. Mm-hmm. If I've got 50 computers, but I only have a license to 40 antivirus security software, something's wrong.
Well, the other thing too we run into a good bit is how many people will pay for an antivirus solution or a backup solution when they already have one in place.
Mm-hmm. They'll have 2 or 3. Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, sometimes they're just paying for it because they're not got even an invoice. Running it.
Yeah.
No, it's like every so often the client will, you know, send me a thing going, do we need to pay for this? And I'm looking at it and I'm like, you hadn't had this in 3 years. You shouldn't have been paying for it, you know, for a long time. Or they'll have a backup service. And I'm like, why are you running a separate backup service? You don't need it. Matter of fact, you're not using it.
Mm-hmm. So definitely. Yeah.
And that's those things where even though in the beginning we told them, look, we're doing these things for you. For some reason, for some people, it doesn't translate to, if you're already paying for this somewhere else, you don't need to.
Right. Well, because it's just what you do. It's like the companies, the scams where they send to the companies and they say, here's your $300 bill for your domain registration.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just, and you don't know, it just gets paid.
Yeah. Yeah. We get a lot of those from clients saying, do I need to pay this? And I'm like, no.
No.
No. And sometimes it's not that much. It's like $45. Just enough to where a business would probably like, just cut a check. Like they're not even going to check on it.
Yeah.
But fortunately, they'll send it up. I'm like, no, if it doesn't come from us, do not pay it.
Yeah, so don't just, if somebody suddenly sends you a bill for, in fact, very few domain registrations are going to actually send a paper invoice, but those mm-hmm. are the ones that people are paying in scams. Okay, reduces help desk response time because the staff will know what's installed and mm-hmm. matching it up to what's pertinent in the latest errors and alerts so we can secure it better. And then reduces the attack service of each device by ensuring the software is correctly patched.
Oh, my goodness. I go through this about twice a year. I send out things to clients like, time to clean up. You know, spring, time to do spring cleaning.
Yep.
And then we'll send them a list of their software and things like that. But, yeah, you'd be shocked, maybe, about how many people are, they put software on there. I'm like, everything you put on there has to be kept up to date. So that's a, you know, that's more complexity you're bringing into your environment and more risks. So let's trim this thing back. If this is a program you're only using once a year, reinstall the darn thing every time you need to use it. Don't leave it on there for a year that you got to keep up with it and patch it and all that. It's a risk you're leaving there for 364 days out of the year so you can use it that one.
Well, and there's a long list of things like that that people don't realize. When you make things more complex, they're harder to secure and maintain. Mm-hmm. You know, it just is what it is.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't help that when they're home using their home computers, they just install all kind of crap on it and they just leave it there. And it'll stay there until, I probably shouldn't say this, but it'll stay there until like this morning when my wife says, my computer's getting full. which is not because she's putting a bunch of programs on it, honestly, because she puts a lot of audio and video files on it. So I know why, but that's usually when people start
thousands of pictures.
Yeah. But that's usually when people start uninstalling programs is they they hit this point where they're going, oh, I need some more free space.
True that. So, but the bottom line is it's the same thing that we go to all the time. You don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't even know what I'm protecting, if I don't even know where the data is, if I don't know what software we're using, then our ability to properly secure it goes out the window. And it's the same thing with using, if I know what software I have, but I don't know what version it is, how helpful is that going to be?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of examples that we're experiencing. A big one right now, so hopefully by the time this comes out, it'll all be settled down, but the Log4Shell, Log4j, Logjam, whatever they're calling it, it is a massive problem. And ironically, it's not making news because it's not easy to explain.
Yeah. Well, not only is it bad, but the first patch that came out for it...
made it work. It gave it a new problem.
It's got a vulnerability too.
So they had to go back and redo them all. Yeah. We just spent days patching that first time. Now we got to go back and do them all again.
Yeah, but you know, again, this is why people that are doing IT for you, that's why they're so valuable, because if you saw this on the news and you said, oh gosh, we got to patch this, and then maybe you hire somebody by the hour to come in and do this, and they patch it and they leave, and guess what? You're like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And you're not paying attention to it anymore. Every time it comes on, you're like, well, we've already patched that. But what you don't know is the patch that you put on there still has a vulnerability. So, I mean, that's why the MSP market is so valuable. Or if you have internal IT, that's why they're so valuable.
Well, and it's why it is hard work to do and do it properly.
I saw a shirt this morning that I liked. It said, cybersecurity is as easy as riding a bike, except the bike's on fire and you're on fire and everything's on fire and you're in hell.
Sounds about right. There's been a lot of those kind of cybersecurity memes that came out in the last week as everybody's been trying to deal with this.
It's been a mess.
You know, the big deal here is that, I mean, literally for us, we're looking at it. The internet is on fire, is what technical people are seeing. Mm-hmm. It is on fire. This thing is so broad. It's so deep. We're not going to know all the places for a while.
Yeah.
And just get the important ones. Get the, you know, the, we're just getting the top. It's so deep. We're going to be finding this. And it's so easy to exploit.
This is one of those things where even when you have asset management, like, for example, we have asset management going on. But when this comes out, it's like, huh, does our asset have this asset?
Exactly.
So now you got to dig even deeper. And then, you know, once we realize that we don't have the issue, now we're turning to our vendors and going, hello, we need to know what you're doing about this. And is it going to be a problem? And so it took up to a week, really, before we started getting some vendors going, okay, we finally checked everything and we're good. And that whole week, I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there, pucker factor going on.
Yeah, because you don't know.
No.
You don't know what you don't know, David. So it's these kind of issues that you don't know where to patch. You don't know what to do. And this one is one that's way deep in there.
Mm-hmm.
And all the vendors had to figure it out. And, you know, sometimes the vendors of your vendors were figuring it out to tell your vendors to tell you so that you could tell any clients that were actually asking. Mm-hmm. I doubt there were many of them.
Nobody was asking, but I think we had one client ask, but we still sent out the thing, you know, either way, because again, you don't know what you don't know. So we try to tell people, this is what you don't know.
Yeah. So all of you people that are obligated under regulations, take that documentation from all of your vendors and keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in anything that's critical and it has, you know, PHI especially. But if you don't know where these things are, then, you know, it's kind of like with the firewall discussion we just had, is that they had a firewall that had a vulnerability in it. If we had a proper inventory showing that firewall, then we would be able to look and see, hey, that firewall hasn't been updated. It needs to get updated. Let's check it. And then potentially prevent 750,000 patients in a data breach. So it's that part. And the part is now we've got the Windows 11 system requirements. So my computer passes every freaking test as far as can it do it. But because the actual processor module is not on the approved list from Microsoft, then it can't run Windows 11. Now, not like I'm in a big hurry, because I know I got time, but I'm also not going to wait until, what, July 2025 when it's closing out to go, maybe I should replace these. So I need to know, do these devices that I have that are running Windows 10, instead of doing it like we did with Windows XP and Windows 7, you know, and Windows, how about, because everybody's on 10 now, how about we all start figuring out how we're going to replace these devices by the time end of life happens, end of support and all of that in October, I think, 2025 on Windows 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're going to be having those conversations in 2022 with our clients. Because, I mean, you think about it, you're like, oh, that's 3 years out. Okay, yeah, but typically when you buy a new system, you know, at least for us, we're looking at a 3 to 5 year usage window. Mm-hmm. Depending on the system and all these and some other factors, but we're looking at that 3 to 5 years. Well, guess what? Three years out is Windows 11. Windows 10 goes into life. So there you go. It's time to start having that conversation, IT folks, this year. Well, this year.
Well, being and all the people that went and replaced all their Windows 7 with Windows 10, what, in 2020, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, what do you mean I got to replace them all again? Make sure they'll upgrade to Windows 11. Anything that won't upgrade to Windows 11, you need to look at how are you going to replace it between now and then.
I'm just glad there's not going to be a 32-bit version of it.
Oh, I know.
I still got one client's on 32-bit version of Windows 10. It drives me nuts.
Oh. It's like, how do you... Oh.
They had to do it because of some old EHR they were using.
Yeah, old software.
Yeah, and now they've finally migrated off of that, and I'm like, okay, now we can go to 64-bit, and they're like, okay, we'll just update it. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way.
No.
So what we'll probably do is just start decommissioning those machines over the next year or so and just get rid of them.
Yeah. But you've got to have a plan, and then you actually budget for them instead of, you know, instead of the panic and buy 10 computers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just start planning and figuring out. You don't have to upgrade them to Windows 11. Just know which ones can.
Yeah.
You know, I got time. I got plenty of time to work out decisions.
Yep.
You know, and no, Microsoft will nag the crap out of me trying to get me to do something. But...
Yeah, and don't jump on Windows 11 too quickly.
No, no.
I've had a few times when we've had to take some machines back to Windows 10. And interesting thing is that if you go to Windows 11, there is a short time frame that you can go back. After that time frame, Microsoft says, apparently you don't need this image anymore. So, bloop, it's gone.
Nice.
So you can't roll back quite so easily.
So the big point is... you've got to know, at least have a fairly decent clue. And when we walk in the door and say, "What it, do you have your IT asset inventory?" It includes hardware, software, and information that is stored on them.
Mm-hmm.
And don't just say, "Well, IT will get you that." No, because guess what? You aren't supporting everything that's connected to that network. You're not managing everything that's connected to that network, are you, David?
Mm-mm. No. And there's times, too, where we've seen it with us. We've seen it with the other IT folks, too, where a company will get rid of a computer, mm-hmm. and it still shows up in our systems. So in our inventory, it's still there.
Yeah,
but
nobody told you it's gone.
Yeah, but it's not still there with the client. And, you know, for us, it's not unusual to see systems sometimes shut down for weeks at a time. You know, you got employees mm-hmm. that moved around, or you've got
out on leave. There,
yeah. I mean, we've got some like accounting firms. They got computers they only pull out 3-4 months out of a year, and then they put them back in a closet. So mm-hmm. it's not unusual to have that happen.
But you need to know they're in the closet. So if someone takes it out of the closet and leaves with it,
mm-hmm.
you have a clue that it's supposed to be there.
10-4.
Yeah. So that's enough for today. Mr. Sims.
All right. Let's wrap it up. All right, folks. Thanks for listening today. Hope you loved today's show. Be sure to share it out and help us get them rankings and ratings up.
We need some help there. We're not doing any. We don't have time to do the work anymore. So we need your help.
Yeah. Anybody want to donate their SEO services, let us know. All right. Thanks. And for Donna and myself, remember, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.